Welcome to a new year, and you're probably listening to the Michael Yardney podcast because you're keen to become a better property investor. Some of you may be wanting more success in life, maybe looking for more money, more choices. Well, today, in this episode of what I'm calling my summer series of podcasts, I'm going to be discussing all those things. I'm going to share 9 investment rules that you must understand if you want to become a better property investor, and then we're going to talk about the 10 major differences between the rich and the average person. Now, during the month of January, I'm going to be presenting 3 episodes rather than the normal 2 shows. You see, I found many people have just got that bit of extra time, so this is a great episode for me to bring you some of the most popular shows, and it'll be a chance for you to catch up with them. Now, the episode you're listening to today was recorded a couple of years ago, at a time when the world was very different to what it is today. So don't be surprised by some of the references about the property market or the time of the cycle, but on the whole, the lessons are really important. In fact, I would call them foundational in building your wealth through property. So don't worry about the buyer's market references or the comment about my upcoming economic and property market updates. Remember, I used to hold those seminars around Australia. That's now all gone because of COVID-related restrictions. If you're a new subscriber to the show, welcome. I can actually see there's so many new downloads every month. They keep increasing. We've had almost 2 million downloads of the podcast. And if you're a regular subscriber, thank you for coming back. We're starting a new year together. Thank you for listening, and I hope you're going to benefit from what you're hearing today, even if you've heard it before. Of course, there are a lot more shows in the archives. You can listen to them at michaelyardneypodcast.com or on your favourite podcast app. In fact, maybe this is a good time of year to catch up with some of the past episodes. Now, a little trick I've learned is to listen at 1.5 times speed. I still sound pretty good, and you can still get good comprehension. So, welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
At the end of this show, you're probably going to end up a bit smarter, a bit wiser about property investment, money and success. Well, that's the byline of this show, isn't it? The thing people keep coming back for. I hope it's what you keep coming back for each week. So I'm going to share with you 9 rules about property investment. We're going to talk about money, the big differences between the rich and the poor. And I'm going to, in my mindset moment, give you some inspirational quotes that have helped me. Maybe they're going to help you. So let's get on with this week's show. I was recently asked to distill my property investment philosophy into a few simple rules. Now, that's a big ask of me. How am I going to distill all the mistakes I've made and those I've seen others make, as well as all the lessons I've learned and the lessons I've seen many successful investors learn along their way? How am I going to distill those into a few simple rules? Look, you've probably heard me say that property investment is simple, but it's not easy. And that's not a play on words. It's simple if you follow the rules, but it's not easy because it's easy to get distracted with all the perceived opportunities that seem to be coming at us and all those mixed messages we get in the media all the time. So anyway, here's my attempt at distilling all that information that I've learned and the many rules I've written about in my books, in my blogs, in my articles, into 9 simple rules. And the first rule is become financially fluent. You see, the secret to financial freedom is to spend less than you earn, save the balance, and then wisely invest your savings into growth assets. So you've got to become money smart. You've got to learn how money, how finance, how the property markets, how the economy works. And then start investing early in your life. So I suggest you learn from proven mentors and get a good team around you. But you've still got to make sure that you've got a thorough knowledge base. Because while you can outsource the property sourcing and the property management and some tax advice and structuring, it's really critical to understand if you're being given impartial advice or if you're being taken advantage of by the many vested interests out there after your money. So take time don't rush into your investments. When you're ready, you better get going. But remember Warren Buffett saying, wealth is the transfer of money from the impatient to the patient. The next rule is adopt a proven investment strategy. You see, in my mind, residential real estate is a high growth, relatively low yield investment. So I recommend investing for capital growth. Now, I know not everybody does, but I've seen so many investors fall along the way and never build a big enough asset base to get financial independence by chasing cash flow. So you know how they say, don't put your ladder up against the wrong wall, because it'd be a pity to climb the ladder up against the wrong wall and then find out halfway down that it is actually the wrong wall and you've wasted all this time. Now, I know cash flow is important. It keeps you in the game, but it's really capital growth that gets you out of the rat race. So first of all, concentrate on building a substantial asset base. That's the first stage of your investment career. And then you slowly lower your loan-to-value ratios, and then eventually you can live off your cash machine. It's just too hard to become rich the other way around from cash flow. If you think about it, the majority of your assets when you retire, when you slow down, when you get financial freedom, are going to be not from money you've earned, not from cash flow, not from rent, but it's going to be the capital growth of your investments. So invest for capital growth. The third rule is not every property is an investment property. See, people choose the wrong property. Of course, any property can become an investment. You just put a tenant in. But few properties are the sort that are going to outperform the averages with regard to capital growth. Few are what I call investment grade. Now, if you're not sure what investment grade is, go back to episode one of the Michael Yardney podcast, either on our website or on iTunes or Stitcher, because I explained it in detail there. Now, remember, location is going to do 80% of the heavy lifting of your investment property over the long term, but you've still got to own the right property. You've got to understand what an investment grade property is, one that's suitable for the demographics of that location. And I guess that leads me to the fourth rule. Demographics drives our markets. Over the long term, demographics, how many of us there are, how we live, where we want to live, what we can afford to live in, that's going to be much, much more important in shaping our property markets than the short-term ups and downs of finance changes or interest rate changes or consumer confidence or government spending. The fifth rule is real estate investing is a game of finance with some properties thrown in the middle. So it's important to recognize that property is a long-term play. So you've got to set yourself up with financial buffers to help you ride the ups and downs of the property cycle and the unknowns that keep happening. The sixth rule is that our economy and our property markets move in cycles. And the main cause behind these cycles is that we're human and we tend to share the same general optimism and pessimism of others. Investors are the most confident near the peak of the cycle when they probably should be the most cautious. And they're the most nervous and hesitant near the bottom of the cycle when the risks are the lowest. It's also a common fallacy that Australian property cycles last 7 to 10 years. They vary in length and they're affected by a myriad of social and economic factors. And then at times, the government lengthens or shortens them by changing economic policies or interest rates, or APRA gets in the way by giving us a bit of a credit squeeze. Now, market sentiment's one of the key drivers of property cycles, and that's one of the reasons our markets overreact, overshooting the mark during booms and getting too depressed during downtimes. As I said, most of us are too optimistic or too pessimistic at the wrong stage of the cycle. It's also important to remember that each property boom sets us up for the next downturn, just as each downturn sets us up for the next upswing. The seventh rule is you must follow my six-stranded strategic approach to choosing an investment-grade property. The first part of it is only buy a property that would appeal to owner-occupiers. Now, that's different to how most people buy an investment property. They think about tenants. And while tenants are important, I think you've got to buy a property that appeals to owner-occupiers. Not that I'm suggesting you sell it, but because owner-occupiers are going to buy similar properties to yours, pushing up local real estate values. Now, this is going to be particularly important over the next couple of years as the percentage of investors in the market starts to dwindle a little bit as the cycle moves on. The second strand is to buy below intrinsic value. And that's why I avoid buying new and off-the-plan properties, which come at a premium. Now, I'm not saying buy a bargain. I'm just saying don't overpay. The third strand is buy a property with a high land-asset ratio. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean buying a big block of land, but buy a property where the land component makes up a significant part of the asset base. And interestingly, a lot of apartments and villas and townhouses also have a high land-to-asset ratio. You just got to buy the right sort of property. And then buy it in an area with a long history of strong capital growth and one that's going to continue to outperform the averages. And that's going to happen because of the demographics in the area. So these tend to be suburbs where there are more owner-occupiers, and owner-occupiers can afford to and want to live there because they like the lifestyle and because they've got a high disposable income in that area and they're able to pay a premium to live there. And you're going to find these tend to be the inner and middle ring suburbs of our big capital cities. The fifth strand to the six-stranded approach is to buy a property with a twist. Something unique, something special, something a bit different about it, something scarce maybe. And the last strand is to buy a property to which you can manufacture some capital growth. It could be through refurbishment, it could be renovations, it could be redevelopment. So rather than just waiting for the market to do the heavy lifting, you're also doing the heavy lifting as well. Now, we're working through the nine rules of property investment. And the eighth one is don't focus on bargains, because they rarely have a future. See, I see so many people so fixated with price, but in today's informed market, there are very few bargains. Think about it, properties that no one else wants today are probably going to be properties no one else is going to want in 5 years' time. Remember, price is what you pay, value is what you get. So you've got to buy the best properties you can afford, because if you can only own three or four properties in your investment career, own the best ones you can. Only buy the type of property that you'd be happy owning in 10 to 15 years' time. And the last of my nine rules I want to share with you is allow for an X factor. Every year there's a few X factors, not the music's TV show. It's really those unforeseen events or situations that blow away all carefully laid forecasts, even those of the best economists. And these X factors can be negative, like the aftermath of the global financial crisis, you know, way back a decade ago, or positive, like the China resources-driven boom that we had after the global financial crisis, or they could be local or they could be abroad with other economic or political factors happening overseas. Well, there you have it, my nine rules. Now, there's plenty more property rules, but remember, I promised to keep it simple today. So there's nine rules of property investing. Follow them and you're likely to have success. Now, in a moment, I'm going to give you my mindset moment, and they tend to be amongst the most popular segments of this show. And we're going to have a bit of a chat about the big differences between the rich and the poor, because I guess you want to become richer, don't you? But before we do, I'd like to ask you a question, because if you're like many people who listen to this podcast or read my daily blogs, you're a bit uncertain. So my question, I guess, is, are you unsure what to do in these changing property markets? Because, boy, are the markets changing in front of our eyes. And in my mind, 2019 is going to be a very, very different year to last year, which is a different year to the year before. So whether you're just getting started as a property investor or you're already an experienced investor, you're probably experiencing some of the things that others are having challenges with. Have the banks throttled your property plans? Has the media made you feel uncertain? You're not sure whether to buy, whether to sell, whether you should just sit in the sidelines and see what happens this year? Are you having a challenge with property at present? Well, you're in good company, because some of the common concerns we're seeing from clients who come to us at Metropole include that they're scared of making a mistake. Maybe they're buying too early. Maybe they're buying in the wrong spot. They find that the banks have held them back a bit. They're wondering whether they should buy a home first or an investment first. Well, maybe whether they should sell an underperforming property. Well, if any of these concerns are in your mind, I'm going to suggest you join me at my National Property and Economic Market Update trainings. And I'm conducting them in Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne in March and April. I only conduct these once a year. It's my event where, in most cases, 500-600 people come along in the big states and hear me and the top faculty of experts. And I'm going to show you how you can profit from property in 2019. So go to propertymarketupdate.com.au. propertymarketupdate.com.au. It'll be in the show notes. I'll leave you a link in the show notes so you can find all about it. And I and my faculty are going to be covering topics that suit both beginning and advanced investors. So even if you've heard me before, this is the year you've got to come, because what I'm going to be discussing is going to be different. It actually has to be different in some areas. Now, of course, we're still going to cover the basics, and If you've heard them before, that's okay. Who knows? You may get a distinction or two. So if you're looking for more choices in life, if you're looking for financial freedom, if you're wanting more money, if you want to understand what's going on in the property markets and how to take advantage of the buyer's market, go to propertymarketupdate.com.au. Find out all about my national property and economic market updates in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane coming up in March and April. And I look forward to seeing you there.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
Believe it or not, some of the most popular blogs on my Property Update website are the motivational, the inspirational quotes that we run a couple of times a week. You know, I've found that inspirational quotes have been one of the reasons that many people become successful. Reading inspirational, motivational quotes on a regular, sometimes daily basis has actually been reported time and again to boost a person's motivation and help them achieve their goals, getting them faster to where they want to be. Now, there seems to be a number of ways that this happens. First of all, they give you a quick boost of motivation when you read something inspiring. When you read the right one, it's a great pick-me-up, especially just after you've read it. You instantly tend to feel a bit happier, a bit more motivated, inspired, and it gets you moving, gives you the energy. Inspirational quotes can sometimes get you out of a slump if you're feeling a bit down, if you're feeling a bit depressed. Sometimes there's nothing better than reading an inspirational quote or two. It helps you feel better, kicks away the blues. Another way quotes help is they cure procrastination. That's one of the tough things we all have to deal with, and sometimes just a few inspiring quotes will get you motivated. And the great thing is inspirational quotes are everywhere. They're free. There's thousands, hundreds of thousands of them. And if you subscribe to my Property Update newsletter, on Mondays and Thursdays, you're going to get a good dose of them, the ones I've selected. But today I'd like to share two with you. The first comes from John Acuff's newest book, Finish, Give Yourself the Gift of Done. And he says, perfection magnifies your mistakes and minimizes your progress. The harder you try to be perfect, the less likely you'll accomplish your goals. Now, the author argues convincingly and humorously that perfectionism is one of the chief enemies of progress in life and in work, a contrarian call that offers ourselves more grace, supported by research, that we may ironically accomplish more by expecting less. So the message is, don't let perfect get in the way of good. Trying to make something perfect actually prevents us from making it just good. Perfectionism is an elusive glory, a bit like a unicorn. Sure, it sounds great, but who's actually seen one? I'd rather ride real horse than wait for an imaginary unicorn. So if you can't achieve perfectionism, don't sweat it. Just go for good instead. Now, the second quote I'd like to share with you today comes from the Greek philosopher, and I can't pronounce his name properly, but it's Epictetus, I think. And he was born a slave and had his teachings written down by one of his pupils. And what he said is, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. And boy, do I see this so often with property investors. See, what it means is, be it property investment, your job, your profession, a skill, or just general knowledge, to improve yourself, you have to learn. But you can't learn if you believe there's nothing left to learn. What if what you know is only one of the many possibilities, and there are some better ones, other ones, different ones? What if what you know could be further enhanced by what other people know? What if what you already know is actually wrong? If you don't show humility and approach all things as an empty, willing vessel, you're not going to grow. Never assume that your mind's full or that what you know overpowers what other people know. After all, how could progress have been made in any field if everybody assumed they knew everything as soon as they learned something? It's arrogant, it's foolish, even for those at the top of their field. And boy, is it a silly thing for property investors who read something and then look for all that confirmation, the confirmation biases we've discussed in previous episodes of the podcast, to prove what they know is right rather than being willing, being open to learn new things. So what can you take from this lesson? Well, no matter what you pursue in life, keep yourself hungry to learn. Choose to always Have a beginner's mind, constantly looking for another angle. Get comfortable with being wrong and relish when it happens. I've spoken to you about it before. I'm a real success at failure. It's okay to be wrong as long as you make it a lesson. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't feel that it's amateurish. An open mind can be your greatest asset if you let it. Look, we tend to be stubborn creatures who'd like to assume we're smarter or more capable than others, but hoping you're superior actually makes you inferior. So ditch the ego and accept your place as an eternal student. Besides, nobody likes a know-it-all, and the true experts are the ones who are going to admit when they don't know something. Why? Because they'd like to learn it. Now, how did those two quotes strike you? How could you apply them to good effect in your life, in your investments, or in your work? I hope you recognise one of the purposes of this podcast is to help you become richer, wealthier, more successful in all the endeavours of your life, including property investment, but not limited to that. Now, I'm not making a judgment when I talk about rich or poor. I write a lot about the rich and the poor, but let me make it clear that this is not a judge of people. I don't judge people by how much money they've got. Owning a lot of money, a big property portfolio, share portfolio, business doesn't make you a more valuable mother, father, brother, sister, uncle. So as in this chat I'm going to have with you, I discuss the rich and the poor. Don't get offended if I use those words or those terms, but I think you know what I'm talking about. And I've been rich and I've been poor, and growing up poor, I knew I wanted to be rich. I studied the subject early in my life, and I've studied it, in fact, all my life, and I've come a long way, and not only have I become rich, I've become wealthy. I've also come to realise that rich people are really poor because all they've got is money, but the wealthy, they've got a lot more than money. They've got the family that loves them. They've got the ability to keep growing. They've got their health. They've got to be truly wealthy. You need lots more than money. You've got to be able to contribute back to the community and have spirituality. But over time, I've discovered that if you're not living in prosperity, you're living in poverty. And if you've been listening to my podcast, you'd realize that I believe wealth is a choice. It's a choice we can all make. I believe wealth's a mindset. I remember Bill Gates once said, it's not your fault if you're born poor, but it is your fault if you die poor. And in Australia, there's no reason why anyone should live in poverty. We're living in the best country in the world, in the best time in history, with the most opportunities. I believe wealth's waiting for you, but you have to make up your mind if you want it in your life. So, as I said, for years I've studied the rich, and then I became one. And then for the last 12 years or so, I've been mentoring, and I've mentored over 2,000 successful business people, entrepreneurs and investors. I've mentored them and allowed them to become rich. And I've studied them with my co-author of the book Rich Habits, Poor Habits, Tom Corley, who did a five-year study of this, how self-made millionaires got to where they were and the habit differences between the rich and the poor. By the way, I hope you've read that book. That's, I think, my favourite of my eight books that I've written. So today I'd like to share with you 10 of the big differences I've realised separate the rich and the poor. There's lots more, but this will give you an idea of the differences. And of course, the reason is, if you want to become rich, you've got to emulate the rich. You've got to think like them. You've got to do what they do. You've got to develop more rich habits. So let's start with a couple of these differences. And the first one is that poor people are skeptical. I distinctly remember a nephew of mine saying after something happened to him at home, oh, those plumbers are a ripoff. They're things that they've charged me for all these things they haven't done. They'll take my money wherever they can. He thought everyone was unjustly wanting his money and that everyone was out there to get him. Do you know somebody like that? Maybe somebody close to home? On the other hand, rich people tend to be trusting. They tend to trust those that they meet, look within reason, and give others the opportunity to be themselves. Another difference between the rich and the poor is poor people look for fault. They're always looking for problems instead of solutions. They end up blaming the government, the environment, the interest rates, their jobs, their education, their parents, the government. I think I already said the government, but they probably deserve two faults. And they make an extensive list of excuses why they can't be successful. On the other hand, rich people, they look for success. They understand that everything happens for a reason. And rather than letting life happen to them, They take direct action and make big things happen. You've heard me talk about it before. You've got to be the pilot of your life, not the passenger. You can't just sit there letting somebody else drive your life. So wealthy people put aside all the excuses and eradicate their blame lists because they have to do what must be done to get rich. Now, it took me a while in my life to realize that. And when I did in my early 40s, I guess, that was a long time ago now, when I stopped blaming my past, I stopped blaming my childhood, I stopped blaming, making a list of all these reasons and recognized that I am where I am, I was where I was then, for all the things I'd chosen to do and chosen not to do, and stopped blaming others. Boy, did my life change and boy, did my results change. Now, another difference between the rich and the poor is poor people tend to make assumptions. When it comes to knowing the truth, poor people often make these sort of assumptions, the wrong ones. If they want to reach out to somebody, they might say, oh, look, they probably haven't got the time to talk to me. You know, they find reasons why things won't work. Instead of checking the facts or asking questions, they never make a true attempt when it comes to getting what they want because they assume it's not going to work. On the other hand, rich people ask questions. They ask, what if? You know, what if I did ask them for advice? What if I did write or email to them? And if you begin to ask questions, you're going to save yourself a lot of hassle. The power is in the hands of those who ask the right questions. Then don't ask your questions. Question your answers. Another thing I've noticed is the poor people say they and them. Look, have you noticed, I don't know, at the supermarket at the checkout, it's a long line and you've been waiting a while and then all of a sudden the person, when you eventually come to the checkout person, I was about to say checkout chick, but I'd probably get into trouble for that, wouldn't I? They say things like, oh, look, they never have enough cashiers. I don't know what's wrong with them. Obviously, these people don't take any ownership or any responsibility over their jobs. They certainly separate themselves from the job that they're getting paid for. It's always them and us. On the other hand, rich people tend to say we. I remember a couple of days ago we were at a restaurant, Pam and my favourite restaurants, and the server was telling how they delight, how we delight in cooking the meals in a particular way. And her sense of pride and ownership, it stimulated me. It made me feel that, you know, she was felt part of it and allowed me to give them a nice tip. Surely you're going to be rich when you invest more in what you believe in. Now, another difference between the rich and the poor is poor people want the cheapest way. I don't know if you've noticed, they tend to look for the cheapest items, for bargains, for free advice. Unfortunately, cheap's always going to be cheap. On the other hand, the rich want the best way. Rich people are going to go an extra mile to find quality. They recognise that price is what you pay and value is what you get. So they don't limit their decisions based on price. They often seek service while they shop. They're prepared to pay to get extra better service. They're prepared to pay for mentors. They're prepared to pay for coaches. They're prepared to pay for advisors. People have often asked me, Michael, why has your business become so successful? And I can clearly say that one of the reasons was when I started taking on business coaches and mentors and paying for people, for outside advisors to help me. So while I help people, I still have advisors myself and pay for mentors and coaches. It changed the way I behaved and I learned, and we therefore have mentors and trainers for our team as well. So I'm prepared to pay for that. I don't look for cheap. Now, another difference between the rich and the poor is poor people think money is more important than time. Think about it. Millions of people around the world are trading their precious time for money. You can always get that $500 back, but you can't get that 50 hours again. Nonetheless, the majority of people trade time for money and never realize their true potential because of it. On the other hand, the rich people know that time's more important than money. They never trade time for money. Moreover, they seek fulfilling experiences that dramatically alter their lives. Their careers are more focused on doing what they love. And because of that, they can help others, and they don't just merely clock in and out to get a paycheck at the end of the week. We're going through the differences that I've noticed between the rich and the poor, and I guess we could do multiple shows on that. But another one I'd want to share with you is that I've noticed poor people tend to compete. When they see an opportunity, they find out how others are doing it and they copy them. Most often, they never consider doing it any other way. Instead, they settle in the belief that they're doing what others are doing and that's the best that they could do themselves. On the other hand, rich people create. They think outside the box and they look for new opportunities. Just continuing on with the differences between the rich and the poor, poor people tend to complain. They tend to criticize. Now, Most poor people have learned how to become poor from their parents. Their family members have conditioned them to believe that everything is wrong instead of right. And so they, as I said, they blame, then they complain. On the other hand, rich people praise and enjoy their blessings. Rich people know that they've got many privileges and they don't take it for granted. That's one of the important parts of being wealthy, gratitude, because their appreciation of gifts, love and circumstances allow them to generate more. Another difference between the rich and the poor is poor people ask for amateur advice. They often listen to the opinions of others and they seek approval of their mates, their friends, their acquaintances, and they believe almost everything they hear without even questioning it. And that's why they get taken advantage of by property salesmen and by spruikers, because they accept opinions as facts and that stops them from doing their research. Once they're satisfied with the answer, because if they get the answer that they want, which is not always the answer that they need, they get themselves into trouble. On the other hand, rich people seek expert advice. They've learned to think for themselves. And if they can't figure it out, they seek expert advice and they're prepared to pay for the advice, and that may give them some more options. Now, they've also learned that experts only make suggestions, which means they aren't confined to a specific answer, but they learn to take advice. And maybe the last difference I'd like to share between the rich and the poor is poor people have got big television sets. Have a think about it. They use their free time to avoid the art of thinking, which for most of them is a challenging task, and they zone out and they have the comfort of entertainment. While poor people have big televisions, rich people have big libraries. Wealthy people are educated. They read a lot of books. They listen to podcasts. They go to seminars. They recognize that improving their knowledge benefits them. So the bottom line is, to get a true perspective on how to become rich, you have to study rich people. After all, you become what you study. So if you're currently surrounded by people who aren't rich, just do the opposite of what they're doing. Soon, you're going to be able to get closer to your own financial goals. If you want to understand more about this, don't forget my great book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits. Now, I'm saying it's great, but it's actually become a bestseller in Australia and overseas and just been reprinted because we ran out again. And you can get it on Amazon or at richhabitspoorhabits.com. You can get it online and you'll understand the study that Tom Corley's done and that I've done, and it'll actually show you how you can start to emulate the rich and let go of some of your poor habits. As we're getting near the end of this week's show, I'd like to read out a podcast review that was left on iTunes, and if you leave a review on iTunes and I read it out, I'm going to gift you any of my books. All you've got to do is email me at michael@metropole.com.au, and I'd love to say thank you and give you one of my books. By the way, I'd also really appreciate if you could tell others about this podcast by maybe forwarding it to them or clicking the share button. You see, 2019 is going to be a fearful year. People are going to be worried. And just like I hope I'm helping you by bringing things back to the fundamentals, I hope you can pass the message on and help other people as well. Because I don't want them to make their investment decisions based on the media on fear. I want them to come back to the fundamentals. Anyway, back to the review from Jared, who said, I've been in the property management industry here in Melbourne, and I'm always looking to increase my knowledge and learn as much as I can. As I learn new content, I can pass it on to my clients. I've just started listening to Michael's podcast, and I can't recommend this content highly enough. Michael brings extensive insights and knowledge into all things property and property investment, of which I have thoroughly enjoyed so far. Definitely will be diving into past podcasts to catch up, but excited about the future content. Well, gee, thank you very much. And I know there's lots of property professionals who listen to it because they tell me about that. And Jared, thanks for the review. Thanks for the 5-star review. And I look forward to giving you a gift of one of my books when you email me. So thank you for you for listening today. And I look forward to being back with you again next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property advice. If you got value from today's show, we'd really appreciate it if you would leave a review and we'll read it out on a future show, and Michael will gift you one of his books as a way of saying thank you. Just go to michaelyardneypodcast.com/review and let us know what you think. If you don't already subscribe, head over to iTunes or your favourite Android app. You'll find us there as Michael Yardney Podcast. If you'd like to gain instant access to the show notes, head across to michaelyardneypodcast.com. Watch out for our show next week. You'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes.